yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yes, sing it hard and sing it well. Sing the love burns straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found. Whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now.
Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is Dr. Jack Rasmus, your host for Alternative Vision Show, the show that addresses what to do about the growing economic and political crises in America, not just what are the causes and dimensions of the crisis. Today we're going to talk about a dimension of the crisis in jobs and wages that's been going on for 25 years now, but which is about to get significantly worse if current global negotiations now occurring between the Obama administration and governments of the Pacific Rim and scores of multinational corporations who are directly involved while we are ignored. No one knows what these guys are talking about, but we can sure guess what's going on with MNCs, multinational corporations, directly at the table, wheeling their deals with the governments, including the Obama administration, while we are looking in from the outside trying to figure out what are these guys planning, but it can't be up to anything good. The topic is free trade, and specifically the Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP for short, the agreement being forged and negotiated as we speak. TPP is just the latest in a push by presidents from Reagan to Clinton to Bush, now to Obama, to expand free trade between countries. Free trade, of course, means we're going to reduce tariffs and quotas and so forth, and in theory it's supposed to mean everybody's going to be better off, but that we know that's not the case. It started under Ronald Reagan. The first free trade agreement was with our neighbor to the north, Canada. Clinton added Mexico and gave us the North American Free Trade Agreement that cost us millions of jobs. And we do know from free trade, by the way, that the jobs lost from industries in the U.S. negatively impacted by imports pay higher wages than the jobs that are created by exports as a result of free trade, about 20% lower. So every time we negotiate a free trade agreement, what happens is the wages drop in the U.S. NAFTA cost us millions of jobs, all kinds of studies about that. And if you don't believe jobs have gone to Mexico as a result of NAFTA, well, you're living in a fantasy world. Just one company, Delphi, for example, big auto parts company in the past in the United States, moved all its jobs to Mexico, over 100,000 jobs as a result of NAFTA. Bush added CAFTA, Central American Free Trade Agreement, and numbers of additional bilateral country-to-country free trade agreements. He then tried to expand it to all of North and South America, but he got outflanked by Brazil and Chile and others who formed their own free trade zone in South America and gave up. But he passed the Central American Free Trade Agreement, rolled that into NAFTA. And Obama comes into office, and what does he do? Well, he passes free trade agreements with Colombia, Panama, South Korea, and now the TPP, the daddy of them all, the biggest free trade agreement on the books being negotiated as we talk, which will mean millions of more jobs lost and even lower wages in America. Still more to come. Lower wages and more jobs lost when we got 22 million people still unemployed and we haven't created any production and supervisory net jobs since 2001. Yes, the labor force in the U.S. is no bigger today, 12 years later, at least production, non-management, private employees, than it was 12 years ago. What's wrong with the American economy? Can't create jobs. Yeah, and we're going to throw some more overseas. Before I introduce my guest here, who is right at the center of this free trade fight against TPP, Mr. Art Stamoulis, I'll give him a proper interview shortly, but before I do, a few comments here on my weekly running commentary on the fiscal cliff. If you recall, several weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I published an article and spoke on this show predicting that a deal will come between Obama and the Republicans in the House that will amount to a settlement here, an agreement on this fiscal cliff. It will come in stages. By the way, if you want a real in-depth analysis of mine, read my forthcoming article, The Three Faces of Fiscal Cliff, which will appear January 1st in Z Magazine and also on my website. It will be there. Just Google me, Jack Rasmus. The website's name is Kiklos Productions. You can also get this information from my blog, jackrasmus.com, or follow me for some short notices on Twitter. My handle is #drjackrasmus. Okay, my prediction for 4 weeks ago was that there will be an agreement, and there will be an agreement this time because CEOs are blocking with Obama. You don't believe me? Just read the front page headlines today in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. Yes, that's what it's all about. Obama's been meeting with him 2-3 times a week for the last several weeks, and who knows how many times his aides have been meeting with him. They're forging a deal and putting pressure on Boehner and the Republicans, so there will be a deal. You can already see cracks occurring. Oh, arch conservative senators like Corker and this other fellow in Tennessee come out and said, well, we got to accept some tax hikes. And the CEOs today say, yeah, we got to accept some tax hikes on individual income taxes. Why? Because Obama has already promised the corporations he will cut their corporate tax from 35 to 28%, which, by the way, is what it was under Ronald Reagan. Okay, so Obama is the new Reagan as far as corporate tax cuts are concerned. All right. We'll come back to this here, this topic, at the end of today's show briefly. I want to say a few more words on it, as we do every week. But first, I want to move on to this other topic of the day. Extremely important, not getting much coverage in the press at all, being done largely in secret. My guest is Arthur Stamoulis. He's executive director of the Citizens Trade Campaign, a national coalition of labor, environmental, family farm, and consumer organizations that works together on questions of international trade policy. Their current focus is stopping the Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP. Citizens Trade Campaign has organized demonstrations publicly here in the various venues where these negotiations are occurring in Virginia, California, Texas, Illinois, and I think most recently, Art will fill us in New Zealand. And thanks to Citizens Trade Campaign, we've got a little bit of a picture of what's going on. They were the first to publish leaked text of several proposed TPP chapters here. Art, thank you for coming and raising our knowledge about this travesty going on called the TPP.
Thanks for having me.
What exactly is the TPP, Art?
Yeah, so the TPP is an international trade and investment pact that's currently under negotiation between the United States and 10 other countries throughout the Pacific Rim. So just among those currently at the table, which are Vietnam, Singapore, Malaysia, Brunei, Australia, New Zealand, Chile, Peru, Mexico, and Canada, just among them, it would already be the largest free trade agreement in U.S. history. But the TPP is also specifically being negotiated as what's called a docking agreement, meaning that other countries could dock on or join over time. And so Thailand has expressed interest in joining. Japan's prime minister has said he wants to join. There's a plan in place now for the Philippines, Indonesia, Laos, Cambodia, Myanmar to eventually join. Other countries are looking at joining. And the stated goal of many of the politicians and many of the corporations behind the TPP is for it eventually to become a free trade area of the Asia-Pacific, something that sets the standards for trade and investment throughout the entire Pacific Rim and eventually globally. For generations to come. And so, you know, I know when a lot of people hear about trade policy, their eyes glaze over. But it's important for people to recognize that the trade policy in this day and age is really about two things. Number one, as you've suggested, it's about making it easier for big corporations to shift jobs around the globe to wherever labor is the most exploited, wherever environmental regulations are the weakest. And so first, under NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, we saw jobs move from the U.S. to Mexico. Then when China joined the World Trade Organization, we saw many of those jobs move from Mexico to China. And now with the TPP, a number of corporations are saying that Chinese sweatshop workers are overpaid. That, you know, these young people who work incredibly long hours and live in cramped dormitories hundreds of miles away from their families to make, you know, iPhones and computers and other products, that, you know, these people are demanding too much, they're too well compensated, and so a lot of the brands and the retailers and other corporate interests now want a pact, the TPP, that can help them move jobs from China to countries like Malaysia and Vietnam, where workers are even more exploited. And so it's a race to the bottom where jobs pay less and less, where working conditions often become more dangerous, environmental concerns go out the window, and workers have less and less power to organize. You know, their freedoms of assembly, their freedoms of speech are ignored. And, you know, the people who end up with the work are stuck toiling under these horrific sweatshop working conditions. Well, here in the United States, we see literally millions of jobs move overseas. Not only does that increase unemployment here and put a tremendous hardships on the families whose livelihoods are directly destroyed, but it also puts a huge and very real downward pressure on the wages and benefits of the jobs that are left. One study put the cost to the majority of American households at over $2,500 each year in reduced compensation as a result of other people's jobs being offshored. And of course, all this offshoring also causes a reduction in the tax base that's needed to fund our schools, our roads and bridges, our other critical public services. And so, you know, we can delve into that more, but that's a huge part of the TPP, undercutting working conditions globally in order to shift more wealth from working people's pockets into the bank accounts of the very rich. Unfortunately, though, that's just part of the story. The second major thing that the TPP would do is undercut government's ability to regulate in the public interest. What do I mean by that? I mean that the oil and gas companies want to use the TPP to block climate change regulations. I mean that Wall Street wants to use the TPP to block common sense financial regulations. I mean that the so-called life science companies, they want to use the TPP to prevent consumer safety and consumer right-to-know measures. I mean, the big pharma wants to use the TPP to extend the length of drug patents. There's a whole smorgasbord of special rights and giveaways that the TPP would give to different corporate interests. There's said to be 29 separate chapters now under negotiation in the TPP. Very few of them have to do with things that people would ordinarily associate with trade, things like tariffs or quotas. The majority of those chapters are about tying government's hands so that they can't institute new regulations, basically rigging the rules of the game in favor of the biggest corporations with the best lobbyists. And, you know, I'll say this rigged game is evident even in the process under which the TPP is negotiating. Again, you know, this would be the biggest free trade agreement in U.S. history. It's meant to set the terms of trade and investment for generations. You know, it's going to affect the economy, the environment, public health, and more. You would think in a democratic society that negotiators would be approaching this in a transparent manner, that they would want all the public input they could get. Instead, you know, the TPP negotiations have been marred by an extreme level of secrecy. They're far less than even the trade negotiations under the Bush administration. And so,
whenever there's secrecy, you better raise your antennae because something's going on if they got to keep it secret.
No, that's right.
You pointed to an interesting thing I'd like you to pick up on a little bit here, right after we're going to take a break. That issue is people don't realize that these international trade agreements, whether it's NAFTA, whether it's TPP, whether it's the World Trade Organization, whatever, directly contradict our democratic rights here in the U.S. When the U.S. government is a signatory to these things, we can't decide as citizens in our own country to do anything that negates those treaties and those agreements. So essentially, we lose our democracy, a part of it, every time one of these deals are concluded. But let's take a brief break, Art, and come right back. And I want to talk about the wage impact on American jobs and workers as a result of these kind of free trade agreements. Okay? This is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions, and we'll be right back after a brief break with Art Stamoulis talking about free trade on steroids, the TPP, or Trans-Pacific Partnership.
I can see the light. I'm a jack of all trades. We'll be all right.
This is Jack West. The show is Alternative Visions, and we are talking with Art Stamoulis of Citizens Trade Campaign about the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, the latest free trade agreement, free trade on steroids, as I like to call it, and the impact this will likely have on American jobs and wages. We know in the past these free trade agreements have had a terrible impact on jobs. According to the Economic Policy Institute, NAFTA alone cost 3.5 million jobs in America. People aren't aware, though, that these free trade agreements also reduce wages, export-import wage differential, it's called. It reduces wages by about 20% for the jobs that remain in the U.S. as a result of a free trade. So, you know, at a time when people just don't have enough money to spend, to consume, to get us out of this crisis that we're in, except for taking on more credit and debt, and we know that real disposable income of American households has dropped about 10% just in the last 4 years here, continuing a long-term trend that's been going on for a couple of decades. So people are taking on more and more credit and debt, and yet we're going to negotiate these deals which lower wages and take away jobs even more so. I'm not an expert on this TPP. I'm just coming up to speed on it myself. But I do know, having looked at NAFTA in great detail, that these free trade agreements are not about exchanges of goods and services solely. It's really about foreign direct investment. You look at NAFTA, the documents associated with NAFTA, most of the pages are about conditions and arrangements for American corporations to enter into these countries and to produce at low cost. It's all about moving American companies, therefore jobs, more so than trade between countries. Art, you want to comment on the wage impact of this?
Yeah, so, I mean, we have a 20-year track record now with NAFTA and NAFTA-style trade agreements showing that, you know, by moving millions of jobs overseas and by giving employers that threat to, you know, large employers to be able to tell their employees, hey, look, get in line or we're going to move overseas as well. And, you know, and even well-meaning small, medium-sized employers saying, you know, look, we'd like to give you a raise. You deserve a raise, but we're competing now with sweatshops in China, and we, you know, we're going to go out of business if we do that. It's put a huge downward pressure on wages and benefits. I mean, even, you know, even if you're someone whose job couldn't possibly be offshored at this moment in time, say you're a firefighter or a home care nurse, you know, you're still impacted by this because of the huge, you know, the increased numbers of unemployed folks in the economy, by the decimation of our labor unions, and by this downward pressure where more and more people are looking for fewer and fewer jobs. Oftentimes, you know, there's this sort of classist, racist assumption I hear from, you know, certain policymakers, certain members of the corporate media. You know, well, look, this is just, you know, those old school manufacturing jobs, you know, factory jobs, the jobs our fathers and grandfathers did, but, you know, that we'd never want for our children. You know, discounting the value of manufacturing and actually making things, which, you know, in and of itself is insane, but also discounting the ability of people in poorer nations to do things like computer programming, engineering. You know, first we saw manufacturing jobs go over in droves, and now we're increasingly seeing white-collar, you know, engineering, programming, financial service work move overseas. And, you know, it's having a huge impact in inequality in our society. It's very difficult to overstate.
Yeah. You mentioned at the very beginning here a list of the countries involved in these negotiations. And I know some of your material you put out, and please do tell us the website where people can go and get more information about this topic and where they might be able to join in some of your upcoming protests. In the list, you indicated a bunch of countries, but China was not in them. What's going on? Is this a move, TPP, to outflank China? Because it's clear from some recent information, China's trying to forge its own free trade zone in Asia, isn't it? So is TPP really a political move as well?
Well,
by the U.S.?
So the TPP is about trying to get all countries to accept the corporate agenda of deregulation, of giving them complete freedom to move work to countries where workers aren't free, and to deregulate, privatize. And, China is still a strong enough country, a powerful enough country to resist parts of that agenda. And so, absolutely, the TPP is about getting all the other countries in the Pacific Rim to go along with the corporate agenda and force China's hand to eventually go along as well. So there's no question about that. I think some people, when they hear of, outflanking China, going after China, think of it in terms of, national interests. And, these pacts aren't about national interests. They're about the interests of the global elite versus the interests of the global majority. I think that's an important point to make clear for folks.
Okay. Your information indicates there are 600 corporate lobbyists that are now participating in these negotiations.
No, that's right. Well, the U.S. Trade Representative has refused to share, after 3 years of negotiations now, any of its proposals that it's making in our names as the American people. It refuses to share any of those publicly. It's granted approximately 600 corporate lobbyists special cleared advisor status that lets them, log onto a computer and read the draft text and the latest proposals anytime they want. And so you've got companies like Walmart and Cargill and Chevron looking over negotiators' shoulders and saying, no, don't do that, try this language instead, assuming they're not actually writing sections of the pact, flat out themselves.
Don't know that. They may be.
No, and certainly in past trade agreements, it's been revealed that certain corporations have written parts of it. I think it's fair to assume that, if they're not flat out writing it literally, they're certainly dictating what the terms are. There's no question about that. One of the leaked texts that we first published was the intellectual property chapter. Among other things, that showed that the U.S. negotiators are pushing the pharmaceutical companies' agenda of extending drug patents beyond their current 20 years, both literally and regulatorily, which would have a huge impact on healthcare costs here in the United States and other developed countries, driving up the prices of prescription drugs. But in developing countries like Vietnam, Malaysia, where people, are often living on just a few dollars a day, it means a death sentence for people with AIDS, tuberculosis, other treatable diseases where they can't get the best treatments for additional years because their monopoly patent drug prices they're forced to pay. They can't access generic medications. And that's, just one part of one chapter. It's despicable, and it shows, who the TPP is meant to serve.
Yeah, they're sitting at the table, 600 of them at minimum, and we can't even find out a press release or anything of what they're talking about or how things are going, right?
And this is a rollback. Under the WTO, which is no bastion of democratic policymaking at all, you can at least go on their website and look at and comment on proposed texts. the free trade area of the Americas under the Bush administration, which you mentioned earlier, the Bush administration published the draft text of. But now, you know, 3 years, 15 major rounds in, the Obama administration still refuses to say what it's been proposing in our names.
Very interesting. You know, we've been trying to rein in these banks and financial institutions that played a big role in the recent collapse a couple of years ago here. And we have a piece of legislation in the U.S. called Dodd-Frank, which is kind of a toothless tiger, but it's a move in the direction of regulating these financial institutions, which are global, of course. All of these big banks are global. But it sounds to me like this TPP will allow these big banks to do an end run around financial regulations and trying to bring some stability to the banking system.
That's right. There is a financial services chapter to the TPP, we know. Those documents have not leaked yet, but we know from, you know, public testimony and comments from different Wall Street interest groups what they're pushing for in the financial services chapter of the TPP. And that's provisions, again, that restrict government's ability to regulate the public interest. So one of the things that Wall Street wants the TPP to do is to forbid any regulations limiting the size of banks and financial institutions. So, you know, limiting regulations that would attack too big to fail. They want to limit any regulations that ban the sale of certain, you know, financial products like you know, derivatives and other risky products, unless they're specifically listed as exempted. So they could, so Wall Street could come up with some new product 10 years from now, and they could say, no, the TPP prevents you from regulating any product that you didn't specifically list and exempt as you're able to regulate. They've also been pushing for provisions that would block firewalls between different types of financial services. So your listeners might be familiar with the Glass-Steagall Act, the Depression-era rule that protected our economy for decades and decades until it was dismantled during the Clinton administration, that separated commercial banks, you know, banks that take deposits and make out loans, from investment banks that do a lot more speculating. You know, that type of reinstatement of Glass-Steagall would be prohibited by the TPP if Wall Street gets its way. And then the other big thing that they're pushing for is restrictions on capital controls, which we don't use that much in the United States, but which now even the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, says are critical tools for, you know, slowing down the spread of financial crises. So, yeah. You know, Wall Street is just one of the corporate interest groups that has a big dog in this fight.
Yeah, it sounds like this TPP, WTO, free trade, all this kind of stuff is the early formation of a global corporate political structure that's in its early phases that has direct conflict with national democratic institutions and...
You know,
but you keep that in mind.
You mentioned, yes, democratic institutions. One of the leaked chapters, which people can find on our website, citizenstrade.org, is the U.S. proposal for an investment chapter. And what the investment chapter would do would allow individual corporations to challenge virtually any law, regulation, or even court decision that they view as cutting into their expectation of profits. So folks may have heard of regulatory takings. It would basically institute regulatory takings cases, cases that would not be heard in countries' domestic judicial systems, not be heard in our court system, but rather would be heard by an international tribunal of trade attorneys. And so under the World Trade Organization, the United States has already lost 90% of the cases that have been brought against it. So we've seen parts of the Clean Air Act, Marine Mammal Protection Act, the Endangered Species Act rolled back. More recently, we've seen tobacco controls rolled back, internet gambling laws rolled back, consumer right to know labels on beef products rolled back. But where the TPP would go beyond the WTO is that the WTO allows individual countries to challenge laws as barriers to trade. The TPP would allow individual corporations to do that. It's a system where we have with NAFTA. Frankly, NAFTA and Canada is the only real developed capital exporting country that we have this system with. So thus far, most of our smaller free trade agreements have been used by U.S. corporations to attack the laws of developing countries. But if we expand the system throughout the Pacific Rim with the TPP, the chickens could come home to roost very much. And
let's,
we could see our own laws.
Thought, Art, and when we come back after a brief break, let's talk about the impact of TPP potentially on the environment. We know that situation is getting much worse in terms of global warming and rising sea levels and storms like Sandy and so forth. Let's talk about that when we come back. This is Jack Rasmus, your host for Alternative Visions. We'll be back shortly. This is Jack Rasmus, your host, the show Alternative Visions, the topic, free trade on steroids, the TPP, or Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. I'm speaking with Art Stamoulis, executive director of the Citizens Trade Campaign, which is valiantly beginning to raise the issue and fight back. And I hope you all make a note of the Citizens Trade Campaign and follow up. And try to join in some of his protests and inform yourself, educate yourself on this important topic of free trade. Art, would you tell us where the listeners can go for some more information about the Citizens Trade Campaign and TPP?
Yeah, visit our website, citizenstrade.org. That's citizens, plural, citizenstrade.org. Or you can follow us on Twitter at citizenstrade is our handle.
Very good. We left it before the last break here talking about what could be the impact on the environment here of this free trade on steroids. We know that these other deals that have been made, WTO, World Trade Organization, and other NAFTA and so forth, have had on net a negative impact on the environment. And almost daily we get reports of greenhouse gas emissions going up faster than we thought, and the world warming even faster than the last scientific prediction. Sea levels going up, of course, Sandy, the recent hurricane has obviously something to do with sea level warming. New York City talking about putting up gates to protect against tidal surges in these storms coming, which will cost taxpayers tens of billions of dollars, if not more. Droughts in the central part of the country, species disappearing by scores almost every year here. What can we expect from TPP and free trade in general in terms of environmental impact?
Yeah, so trade agreements like the TPP affect the environment very negatively in a couple of major ways. The first is, when you're exporting manufacturing jobs overseas to take advantage of lower paid labor, but also lower environmental costs, that has a huge impact on the environment. I've got a friend who's a mill worker who talks about the mill where he worked in Washington State closing down, and a handful of lucky workers being kept on an extra month to pack up the entire mill and ship it over to China. And they packed up, every piece of machinery, every bolt, every wire, every conduit, packed it into just dozens and dozens of giant shipping containers. And they packed up the entire factory and sent it over except for one thing, the effluent treatment for the wastewater. They said they didn't need that. The countries where these jobs are moving to and this manufacturing is moving to have much, much dirtier energy sources. The carbon intensity of their energy portfolios is much higher than here in the United States. And so that, coupled with then shipping the products, from the manufacturing source in Asia to the markets in places like New York City, also adds to the carbon emissions. So that's one piece of the story, and it's hardly ever looked at, the embedded emissions in our products and how, oh, wow, we're doing a great job. We're reducing emissions overall in the United States every time a factory shuts its doors here. You know, well, maybe we are reducing them here locally by closing the factory, but overall, globally, they've just increased massively. The other thing that the TPP specifically would do would give corporations new powers to challenge future climate regulations and virtually any other new type of environmental or consumer safety regulation. So under NAFTA, the North America Free Trade Agreement, just less than a month ago, a U.S. energy company challenged Quebec's ban on fracking, saying that that was an unfair barrier to their investments, that it was an expropriation of their investments, that they had, you know, acquired mineral rights with the expectation to frack them. And, you know, by doing so, the Quebec government, you know, is violating NAFTA and should be forced to compensate this company. The TPP would expand that throughout the Pacific Rim. And folks who are concerned about fracking, who are concerned about the tar sands, who are concerned about coal exports, you know, need to realize that the market for a lot of these fossil fuels that are being ripped up in the United States and Canada is no longer in the United States and Canada. It's not going to, you know, lower energy costs for Americans. It's being shipped overseas to Asia, where the industry now is. And the TPP would make it much more difficult for environmental movements to stop that.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, the process is if corporations lose out to citizens protesting on whatever the issue in their own country, they get another bite at the apple through these international courts and so forth to negate democracy at the national level.
That's absolutely right. Under CAFTA, there's a famous example, you know, right now, where a company called Pacific Rim Mining acquired access to a gold mine in El Salvador. People, you know, in the community were worried that the gold mining, because it uses a lot of water, would draw down their well water, and then the effluent, because the process uses cyanide, would poison their rivers, which they needed to survive from. And they fought a heroic multi-year battle where, you know, there were actually people were killed or were tortured to death in this fight, but they won. They won, and the government eventually denied this mining company a gold mine. And what did the mining company do? A permit for their gold mine. They went to one of these international tribunals under CAFTA, and they demanded hundreds of millions of dollars in compensation. And you know, this is the type of system that right now is going on between a handful of countries, and usually, you know, has been used to devastate less powerful developing countries. A system that would be spread throughout the Pacific Rim if the TPP were enacted.
What can you say about other environmental impacts, about free trade and TPP in general? I know you mentioned here about we're just going to export more coal to China or some places. You know, China, people aren't aware, one of the worst polluting industries are coal-fired utility plants. And China is building 3 new coal-fired utility plants every year. So that's like 150. And if you live in the western United States, you're breathing this stuff, folks. You know, it's coming over the Pacific and falling on us. So it's a global world, and, you know, the environmental issues are global, and it sounds to me like nothing but bad stuff can come of this TPP so far as environmental regulations are concerned.
No, that's right. I mean, you know, virtually anything an environmental movement would do to try to block the export of coal, the export of fracked natural gas, the export of tar sands, you know, by getting a local government agency to deny a permit, you know, things like that would be considered a barrier to trade under the TPP and would be challengeable under the investor state provisions. Not, you know, a foreign government wouldn't have to call it a barrier to trade. Any individual corporation could challenge that environmental decision for, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars and get the decision overturned. It's a, you know, it's a horrible system, and it hugely threatens our ability to regulate, you know, against climate change and try to mitigate some of these damage. You know, I mean, there's other things the TPP would do. It would open up, you know, in countries like Peru and parts of the Pacific Islands, you know, some of our last remaining, you know, pristine forests to new development. You know, it would create incentives for, you know, new palm oil plantations. You know, groups like Rainforest Action Network have been fighting against that. You know, I mean, the impacts that this has, you know, on the environment are huge, you know, in addition to the economic impacts that I think more people are aware of.
Well, we need to take another brief break. When we come back, let's talk about the estimate of job impact on U.S. jobs at this time when we're having such a hard time creating jobs in the U.S. Should we go down this TPP road? This is Alternative Visions. Jack Rasmus, your host. My guest, Arch Demuis, Citizens Trade Campaign. We'll be talking about TPP impact on jobs and other topics when we come back.
If I had me a gun, I'd find the bastards and shoot them on sight. I'm a jack of all trades. We'll be all right.
This is Jack Rasmus, your host, the show, Alternative Visions. The topic, free trade on steroids. My guest, Mr. Art Stamoulis of the Citizens Trade Campaign. Art, in this last segment of the show, I'd like to talk about TPP and the possible likely impact on jobs. And then I'd like you once again to tell us where your where the listeners can go and get more information. And tell us about, after we talk about jobs, I want you to tell us about what are you doing? What's this citizens' trade doing right now, and what can others do to join in? But let's talk about jobs. Okay. We know that President Obama has put great weight on stimulating the manufacturing sector in the United States as a way to create jobs. And there's been some talk about the jobs that have been created as a result of manufacturing recovery in the United States. You know, keep in mind the person put in charge of the stimulating manufacturing jobs was General Electric CEO Jeff Immelt, who just appeared a couple of days ago on the Charlie Rose show, really praising Obama. And we'll talk about that a little bit more, what that means for fiscal cliff shortly. But, you know, the facts just aren't that obvious. Yes, there's been some manufacturing jobs created, but, you know, 10 years ago, we had 18.7 million manufacturing jobs. Today, we only have 11.9 million jobs. We've lost 7 million manufacturing jobs in a decade. About half of those, it's been estimated, have been lost due to free trade agreements. Free trade and trade with China, which is quasi-free trade, has cost us 3.5 million jobs in just the last 10 years. Obama talks a lot about, oh, the recovery of the auto industry, 150,000 jobs in the last couple of years. Yes, but we lost 300,000 jobs in, from 2008 to 2010 in manufacturing. And the jobs that have come back are low-wage jobs, temp jobs. Here's a figure for you, folks. Yes, we've created 4.5 million jobs in the last few years. But 60% of the jobs that we lost during the recession were high-paying jobs, 60%. 58% of the jobs we've created since the recession so-called ended are low-wage jobs. We have been trading high-wage jobs for low-wage jobs in the last 4 years. A lot of those high-wage jobs have been jobs lost to free trade and offshoring and China and other deals. What do you, Art, anticipate the impact on jobs is going to be from TPP? You got an estimate?
You know, it's hard to come up with a hard number when the negotiators keep the tax secret. Once that information gets out, a group like Economic Policy Institute can run the numbers through their economic models and give us a hard prediction. But if you look at the history of similar trade agreements over the past 20 years, as you said, you know, just in the last decade alone, 3.5 million jobs lost. And expanding that, those type of policies throughout the Pacific Rim, I think anyone would be a fool not to expect millions of more jobs lost if the TPP negotiations continue on their current track and more countries join on. So this is going to be devastating for jobs in the United States. And, you know, there are policies that could be put in place that would help job creation, that would help the U.S. manufacturing sector rebound. But, if our elected officials are passing trade agreements like the TPP, those are going to be like, running on a treadmill while stuffing your mouth full of donuts is the way one friend described it. It's going to be for naught.
Well, we certainly can expect nothing on the positive side in terms of net job creation from any of these free trade agreements if we look at those that have been passed already. And I don't see how TPP will be any different if it, too, is introduced. Tell us how we can what is Citizens Trade Campaign doing? And what can people do to join you?
Yeah,
what are your activities right now and planned?
Yeah, I'll tell you, just this week, the U.S. Trade Representative Ron Kirk, who's President Obama's cabinet-level trade advisor, he told a reporter that the biggest threat to the TPP's completion is public opposition. I've got the quote right here. He says, "The real stumbling blocks to us getting done aren't as much the difficulty in negotiating with 10 other countries. It's to quiet some of the voices in America that are saying, why are you doing this? This is awful. This is a giveaway." That's his direct quote. And so, it's up to us to ensure that our voices aren't quieted, as the administration would like, but rather that our voices are being amplified. Just on December 1st, there was a big cross-border action on the U.S.-Canada border. To quote-unquote celebrate Canada's entry into the TPP, and labor unions, internet freedom groups, environmentalists, Occupy activists from both sides of the border came together. They unveiled a new North American Unity Statement opposing NAFTA expansion through the TPP that people can read about at tppxborder.org. And set a goal of getting 1,000 organizations across North America to endorse that statement. Because, you're not likely to hear about it in the corporate media or in most schools, but it's important to remember that we have repeatedly shut down and defeated corporate power grabs like this in the past. Back in the 90s, we derailed the World Trade Organization's expansion, and negotiators have been meeting every 3 months for the past 13 years since, and they still haven't gotten back off the ground. The Bush administration, they tried to do the Free Trade Area of the Americas throughout the Western Hemisphere, and people's movements came together and said no and shut that down. And we can do it again with the TPP, but it's going to take people getting the word out about it, because the corporate media isn't going to do it for us. Unfortunately, most of our elected officials aren't going to do it for us. It's going to be word of mouth and through, progressive outlets like this one. It's not going to be CNN or Fox News or New York Times. So people can go to citizenstrade.org. They can hit the big take action button to contact their elected officials. They can sign up for our updates. We do monthly briefing calls people can sign up for to learn more on how to get involved. But it's going to take all of us to get out there, really start sounding the alarm about this, because, as the U.S. Trade Representative said, it's people not being quiet and raising questions about the TPP that are going to defeat it.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on, Art, and raising our knowledge about this very important development going on behind the scenes as we talk. That's going to have such a tremendous impact on the American economy and the standard of living of so many people in this country, as have the previous free trade agreements. This is a corporate global government in formation, in progress, the early stages, which will have not only economic impact, but increasingly political impact. We're giving up our rights to global multinational corporations who will be using it to negate what we got left of democracy in this country. It's a battle between the very, very few with an awful lot of money versus the rest of us. Well, that sounds familiar nowadays, doesn't it? Okay, Art, thanks a lot for coming on. I know you got to leave a little early, Art, but I will pick up here once you sign off and say a few more closing things about the fiscal cliff before we leave in a couple
having
minutes.
Me.
Thanks, Art.
Take care.
Okay. A few more comments on the fiscal cliff here. As I had indicated at the beginning of the show in previous shows here, I have predicted a deal is coming, and that deal will now be possible because corporate CEOs are backing Obama and putting pressure on the Republicans and Tea Party folks in the House of Representatives. Negotiations going on secretly behind the scenes again. Whenever you see secret negotiations, you know something's going on and they're making some progress. And as I said at the beginning of the show, just check out the front pages today of the New York Times and Wall Street Journal. Obama, throughout the recent election, said, I want to cut corporate tax rates, corporations, corporate income tax, from 35 to 28%. So did Romney and the Republicans, the 25%. So both have already made the decision to cut corporate taxes. It's only a question whether it comes now, around January 1st, or whether we have a total revision of the tax code that comes later in the summer. But you can bet the big trade-off is going to be Medicare, maybe Social Security, Medicare cuts in exchange for corporate tax cuts. Just a quote from the Wall Street Journal from Douglas Oberhelm, CEO of Caterpillar. Let's start wiping out all the deductions. I think all of us are on that wavelength today to begin the process. Watch the next week. What happens? We may even get some deal before next week. Partial. All right, more on this topic in the future. Fiscal Cliff. This is Jack Rasmus, your host, Alternative Visions.